The Rich Get Richer and the Poor Get Prison by Jeffrey H. Ryman. This essay challenges the reader to view the criminal justice system from a radically different angle. Specifically, Jeffrey Ryman argues that the correction system and broader criminal justice policy in the United States simply provide the illusion of fighting crime. In reality, he argues, criminal justice policies reinforce public fears of crimes committed by the poor. These policies, in turn, help to maintain a criminal class of disadvantaged people. A criminal justice system is a mirror in which a whole society can see the darker outlines of its face. Our ideas of justice and evil take on a visible form in it, and thus we see ourselves in deep relief. Step through this looking glass to view the American criminal justice system, and ultimately the whole society it reflects, from a radically different angle of vision. In particular, entertain the idea that the goal of our criminal justice system is not to eliminate crime or to achieve justice, but to project to the American public a visible image of the threat of crime as a threat from the poor. To do this, the justice system must present us with a sizable population of poor criminals. To do that, it must fail in the struggle to eliminate the crimes of the poor people commit, or even to reduce their number dramatically. Crime may, of course, occasionally decline, as it has recently, but largely because of factors other than criminal justice policies. In recent years, we have quadrupled our prison population and, in cities such as New York, allowed the police new freedom to stop and search people they suspect. No one can deny that if you lock up enough people and allow the police greater and greater power to interfere with the liberty and privacy of citizens, you will eventually prevent some crime that might otherwise have taken place. I shall point out just how costly and inefficient this means of reducing crime is in money for new prisons, in its destructive effect on inner city life, in reduced civil liberties, and in increased complaints of police brutality. I don't deny, however, that these costly means do contribute in small measure to reducing crime. Thus, when I say that criminal justice policy is failing, I mean that it is failing to eliminate our high crime rates. We continue to see a large population of poor criminals in our prisons and courts, while our crime reduction strategies do not touch on the social causes of crime. Moreover, our citizens remain fearful about criminal victimization, even after recent declines. Nearly 30 years ago, I taught a seminar for graduate students entitled The Philosophy of Punishment and Rehabilitation. Many of the students were already working in the field of corrections as probation officers, prison guards, or halfway house counselors. Together, we examined the various philosophical justifications for legal punishment, and then we directed our attention to the actual functioning of our correctional system. For much of the semester, we talked about the myriad inconsistencies and cruelties and the overall irrationality of the system. We discussed the arbitrariness with which offenders are sentenced to prison and the arbitrariness with which they are treated once there. We discussed the lack of privacy and deprivation of sources of personal identity and dignity and the ever-present physical violence, as well as the lack of meaningful counseling or job training within prison walls. We discussed the harassment of parolees and the inescapability of the ex-con stigma, the refusal of society to let a person finish paying for his or her debt to society, and the absence of meaningful non-criminal opportunities for the ex-prisoner. We confronted time and again the bald irrationality of a society that builds prisons to prevent crime, knowing full well that they do not, and one that does not seriously try to rid its prisons and post-release practices of those features that guarantee a high rate of recidivism and return to crime by prison alumni. How could we fail so miserably? We are neither an evil nor stupid or impoverished people. How could we continue to bend our energies and spend our hard-earned tax dollars on cures we know are not working? Toward the end of the semester, I asked the students to imagine that, instead of designing a criminal justice system to reduce and prevent crime, we design one that would maintain a stable and visible class of criminals. What would it look like? The response was electrifying. Here's a sample of the proposals that emerged in our discussion. First, it would be helpful to have laws on the books against drug use, prostitution, and gambling, laws that prohibit acts that have no unwilling victim. This would make many people criminals for what they regard as normal behavior and would increase their need to engage in secondary crime. The drug addicts need to steal and pay for drugs, the prostitutes need for a pimp because police protection is unavailable, and so on. Second, it would be good to give police, prosecutors, and/or judges broad discretion to decide who got arrested, who got charged, and who got sentenced to prison. This would mean that almost anyone who got as far as prison would know of others who committed the same crime but were not arrested, were not charged, and were not sentenced to prison. This would assure us that a good portion of the prison population would experience their confinement as arbitrary and unjust, and thus respond with rage, which would make them more antisocial, rather than respond with remorse, which would make them feel more bound by social norms. Third, the prison experience should not be only painful, but also demeaning. The pain of loss of liberty might deter future crime, but demeaning and emasculating prisoners by placing them in an enforced childhood characterized by no privacy and no control over their time and actions, as well as the constant threat of rape and assault, is sure to overcome any deterrent effect by weakening whatever capacities a prisoner has for self-control. Indeed, by humiliating and brutalizing prisoners, we can be sure to increase their potential for aggressive violence. Fourth, prisoners should neither be trained in a marketable skill nor provided with a job after release. Their prison records should stand as a perpetual stigma to discourage employers from hiring them. Otherwise, they might be tempted not to return to crime after release. Fifth, ex-offenders sense that they will always be different from decent citizens, that they can never finally settle their debt to society, should be reinforced by the following means. They should be deprived for the rest of their lives of rights, such as the right to vote. They should be harassed by police as likely suspects and be subject to the whims of parole officers who could at any time threaten to send them back to prison for things no ordinary citizen should be arrested for, such as going out of town or drinking or fraternizing with the wrong people, and so on. In short, when asked to design a system that would maintain and encourage the existence of a stable and visible class of criminals, we constructed the American criminal justice system. The practices of criminal justice system keep before the public the real threat of crime and the distorted image that crime is primarily the work of the poor. The value of this to those in positions of power is that it deflects the discontent and potential hostility of middle America away from the classes above them and toward the classes below them. If this explanation is hard to swallow, it should be noted in its favor that it is not only explains the dismal failure of criminal justice policy to protect us against crime, but also explains why the criminal justice system functions in a way that is biased against the poor at every stage from arrest to conviction. Indeed, even at an early stage, when crimes are defined in law, the system concentrates primarily on the predatory acts of the poor and tends to exclude or de-emphasize the equally or more dangerous predatory acts of those who are well off. In sum, I will argue that the criminal justice system fails in the fight against crime while making it look as if crime is the work of the poor. This conveys the image that the real danger to decent, law-abiding Americans comes from below them rather than from above them on the economic ladder. This image sanctifies the status quo with its disparities of wealth, privilege, and opportunity, and thus serves the interests of the rich and powerful in America, the very ones who could change criminal justice policy if they were really unhappy with it. Therefore, it seems appropriate to ask you to look at criminal justice through the looking glass. On the one hand, this suggests a reversal of common expectations. Reverse your expectations about criminal justice and entertain the notion that the system's real goal is the very reverse of its announced goal. On the other hand, the figure of the looking glass suggests the prevalence of image over reality. My argument is that the system functions the way it does because it maintains a particular image of crime, the image that it is a threat from the poor. Of course, for this image to be believable, there must be a reality to back it up. The system must actually fight crime, or at least some crime, but only enough to keep it from getting out of hand and to keep the struggle against crime vividly and dramatically in the public's view, never enough to substantially reduce or eliminate crime. I call this outrageous way of looking at criminal justice policy the Pyrrhic defeat theory. A Pyrrhic victory is a military victory purchased at such a cost in troops and treasure that it amounts to a defeat. The Pyrrhic defeat theory in it argues that the failure of the criminal justice system yields such benefits to those in position of power that it amounts to success. The Pyrrhic defeat theory has several components. Above all, it must provide an explanation of how the failure to reduce crime substantially could benefit anyone other than criminals, that is. I argue that there is a failure to reduce crime substantially broadcasts a potent ideological message to the American people, a message that benefits and protects the powerful and privileged in our society by legitimating the present social order with its disparities of wealth and privilege, and by diverting public discontent and opposition away from the rich and powerful and onto the poor and powerless. To provide this benefit, however, not just any failure will do. It is necessary that the failure of the criminal justice system take a particular shape. It must fail in the fight against crime while making it look as if serious crime and thus the real danger to society are the work of the poor. The system accomplishes this both by what it does and by what it refuses to do. I argue that the criminal justice system refuses to label and treat as crime a large number of acts of the rich. I argue that the criminal justice system refuses to label and treat as crime a large number of acts of the rich that produce as much or more damage to life and limb as crimes of the poor. Even among the acts treated as crimes, the criminal justice system is biased from start to finish in a way that guarantees that, for the same crimes, members of the lower classes are much more likely than members of the middle and upper classes to be arrested, convicted, and imprisoned, thus providing proof that crime is a threat from the poor. Our criminal justice system is characterized by beliefs about what is criminal and beliefs about how to deal with crime that predate industrial society. Rather than being anyone's conscious plan, the system reflects attitudes so deeply embedded in tradition as to appear natural. To understand why it persists even though it fails to protect us, all that is necessary is to recognize that, on the one hand, those who are the most victimized by crime are not those in positions to make and implement policy. Crime falls more frequently and more harshly on the poor than the better off. On the other hand, there is enough benefits to the wealthy from the identification of crime with the poor and the system's failure to reduce crime that those with the power to make profound changes in the system feel no compulsion nor see any incentive to make them. In short, the criminal justice system came to existence in an early epoch and persists in the present because, even though it is failing, indeed because of the way it fails, it generates no effective demand for change. When I speak of the criminal justice system as designed to fail, I mean no more than this. I call this explanation of the existence and persistence of our failing. When I speak of the criminal justice system as designed to fail, I mean no more than this. I call this explanation of the existence and persistence of our failing criminal justice system historical inertia explanation.